What's up, you beauties? Welcome to High and Wide Radio, episode, I think, 35. Or is it 36 of season 6? I don't know.
It's 35 at the top, as long as that number's right.
All right, well, let's go with 35 of season 6. I'm your host, Jim Iacovone, joined by Jack Smith. If you're watching us live on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed and set an alert for future shows. And if you're listening as a podcast, please make sure you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Make sure to hit those subscribe buttons, the like buttons, the leave 5-star reviews, the comment buttons. You know, we love to see you guys in the comments. And we're on Instagram now. Right now, we're live on my account at JimIkeHW on Instagram. So give us a shout out on Instagram. It's something new we're trying. I actually still have to get it up, but big show planned for you guys. We have a special guest coming on, our good friend Colin Newby. We're going to talk Trevor Zegras with Colin Newby. He just put out an article talking about Zegras. If you guys want to check it out before it comes on, I think we posted it on our Twitter account, but you can follow Colin on Twitter as well. So we have a new segment coming up for you guys. It's a stay or go segment. We're going to dissect the Flyers roster, figure out which players we want to stay, which we want to go. Of course, we want your guys' opinions. We're going to do a quick Flyers prospect recap. We're going to pick three players to go through. And then obviously once Colin comes on the show, going to talk Zegras, going to talk Stanley Cup playoffs. I think a couple awards just came out. We got a big show planned for you guys. So with no further ado, Jack, why don't we start off? Let's kick it off. It's a new thing we're going to do. Stay or go. We have three or four players for this show. And let's kick it off. Let's start off with the first player. Who do you want to do?
Good question, Jim. I don't want to get too juicy. So some of the talk around Flyer circles I've seen is about, obviously, things didn't go well with Mark Stahl. No, we're not going to talk about Mark Stahl. That's a given. I want to talk about Eric Johnson and stay or go. I think most people would think immediately go. Clearly didn't have enough left in the tank. Clearly couldn't go for more than back-to-back games at keeping, the level up. I understand moving on from him wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. However, what if he were to be next year's Mark Stahl? Because you don't want a rookie sitting in the box for the majority of the season. Sure, you're going to have to get him in a game or two here and there, but as we saw this year, you were going to have injuries galore. So I don't think he played poorly enough where you can say he can't even be your seventh defenseman. He brings a veteran presence to the locker room. He's a genuinely good guy. Got Stanley Cup playoff and Stanley Cup itself experience. I think that could be really good for the younger guys and whatnot. And as long as you don't play him too much, again, unless Michkov arrives before we start the season, we're not exactly going for it. So I do think that in a scenario where he's only your seventh defenseman, and it's not to say you can't just bring rookies up or bring young guys up like Andres and Adders and things of that nature and just keep him in the box and mix and match. And we'll see what happens this offseason too, if any big moves are made. I don't think it's that crazy. If he's cheap, you know what you have. There's a case here for stay. And I made that case. I'm going to say stay in a very small box in the seventh defenseman only. What do you think of that?
This was EJ, right? Eric Johnson?
Yes. No, Stahl's gone. Stahl.
I didn't mind Eric Johnson. He said he loved it here. He gave a lot of positive reviews, glowing reviews of the Philadelphia Flyers, from the organization to the locker room. His play on the ice. I mean, listen, this guy's 35, 36 years old. He, as a seventh guy that might play the Stahl role, yeah, sure. I'd be fine with that. For a reasonable price. I can't. Let's look up here and see what Stahl made. Did we touch on that already, what Stahl made this past season?
I thought it was league minimum.
Was it league minimum? Because if it's league minimum, all right, so Stahl got 11. He got $1,100,000, so 1.1. I don't know why I said it like that.
Definitely not league minimum.
Yeah, so, but it's not going to kill your cap either, no. Right?
And what do you need your cap for at this point?
Right, and whatever Stahl brought, he brought behind the scenes because definitely wasn't to help win hockey games. Like I would argue that he actively helped to lose games. But you know, I wouldn't hate to bring Eric Johnson back. Wouldn't hate it in the seventh spot. Having said that though, like there's youth coming. And we're going to talk about one of these guys, I think, later on in the show here. But yeah, like a couple guys are saying in the comments here, Dave's chiming in, needs to be dirt cheap.
I agree. Totally agree.
Oakum chiming in, no, enough vets, let them walk. And
well, see, I don't want a rookie wasting away in the press box. They need to play. And a lot of the interchangeable stuff is irritating. They need to play for extended periods. So only, and I emphasize only in a, start when somebody's injured or somebody needs a break once in a while capacity at pretty damn close to. So Eric Johnson made 3.25 last year. He's going to take a significant drop from that. So I've got to imagine that it would be pretty close to what Staal made or less. And again, if it's 1 year, it's not that big of a deal, but I don't want to see, maybe Zamula could feel that role. I don't know how, I kind of hope Zamula's moved in the offseason as a piece of another bigger deal. But if he's not, I could get by with Zamula being that guy. I don't see him in the long term being anything worthwhile. But if they got Adderd or Andre or somebody like that just sitting in the box, that's wrong. That's bad. I do not want that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'll go like this. If he's the eighth guy, I'll say keep him, right? Because injuries are going to happen. The Flyers got relatively lucky with injuries until about, January, February of this year. Like, let's remember here, something's up with Drysdale, right? They said it was core-ish, which I think we all have, like, PTSD from that. Yeah. So they're going to need at least an extra body or two, right? Who knows what's going to happen with Drysdale.
So let's go down their defense real quick. I mean, you got Sanheim, York, Ristolainen should be back fully healthy. I don't know what's going on. We'll see what they do this offseason. I would still be surprised if they brought Walker back, but it has been discussed. They re-signed. Oh, excuse me. What's his name? Oh, geez. Here we go. I'm going to blank what I'm trying to. The guy they just re-signed 3 years. Sealer. They re-signed Sealer. So that's four guys right there, right? Am I miscounting? Yeah, four guys right there. Who am I missing from the main roster? Oh, Drysdale. Drysdale should be back and healthy. So you're already at five. You know, you're going to want to see Andre play. You're going to want to see Adderd play. I was just trying to pull up anybody else on the defensive end that you're going to want potentially see play. I'm sure there's somebody we're not thinking of. I don't know if Hunter McDonald is ready yet, but I wouldn't be completely against it either. I want to see these kids and see what they got. I'm not sure how far away certain people are. I don't think we're going to see Bonk this year.
No, we won't see him.
I mean, you might want to see with Ethan Sampson, Hells Grand. You're going to want to see, you know, and we'll see who else they pick up. And I'm sure they'll pick, you know, Victor Mete is a name, not for the future, but a depth piece. Just because he's sitting in your box doesn't mean you have to start him. If somebody gets hurt, you can still call up your guys and keep him in the box and start your rookies. He's there in case of like absolute emergency or if somebody needs a night off. That way you don't have to send, you know, a guy from Lehigh Valley to Philly and vice versa back and forth and all that shit. So to reiterate, he's your seven. If there's an extended injury, we're seeing Adderd and all those other guys, especially Andre. I really want to see Andre this year before Johnson. Johnson would be in case of emergency, more for the locker room, if anything, and just a guy, if you really get hammered with injuries, you are going to want a guy like that who has played at the NHL level. You're not going to want to go full out rookies. That does not work. So that only in that capacity would a guy like Eric Johnson stay. And I feel like if he goes, they're going to get somebody similar anyway.
Yeah. I would be fine if he stays, but just for, What's the word when two people disagree? This is going to be one of those shows where I just can't think of simple words. I'll say he goes just because of what they have coming up. But so it will be split, and we'll see what what happens in the comments, and we'll let the viewers kind of decide on that one. Because
I like that this was brought up. Though, can we jump to shark a little bit?
This is for Samuelson. Let's hold off on that because I have that. Yeah, yeah. Keep
that
these
could
guys
change
waiting.
A lot of things. That could change a lot of things. All right. So okay, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, that's something for sure. Let's touch on that when we get our buddy coming on here. So all right, next player, Jack. Let's run through some of these guys. Who do you got on the list?
Let's talk an easy one here. Travis Sanheim. We're going to talk about anybody who could potentially get moved. So you're not going to hear us talk about like Owen Tippett recent signing an 8-year deal. Yeah, he's got to go. No. Sanheim, only because he almost was a go at the beginning of this season. Totally different season this year. Maybe it's coaching staff. I don't know. But we were worried about him coming in. I wouldn't say he's the greatest defenseman in the world, but I think he will, when this team is ready to go, settle into a nice, hopefully nice, second pairing defenseman role. You can argue who was the better top defense. Who is the top defenseman of Flyers right now? I'm sticking with Sanheim still. If we're winning any cups, he can't be that guy. I understand in my mind, he's got a ceiling that I don't think he's going to explode through. But yes, as brought up right here, the other name would be York, and maybe York surpasses him. Ideally, that's what I would want. The cap's going up. I know the Sanheim makes a good chunk of change. He's here long term, but when the cap goes up, natural inflation, what he's making, if he's a pretty good second pair defenseman, I'm fine with that. I have no issues with that. He's a stay for me. I don't see them getting blown out of the water with the trade. They need defense. They need defense on the roster now of this caliber. He's an easy stay for me, Jim.
I'm going to go stay on Sanheim too. And it's, you know, pretty stark contrast to what I was saying back in September.
Not just you.
Yeah, if there was a way to get rid of him, they had to figure it out. And Sanheim, I think, proved a lot of his doubters and haters wrong for most of the season. There were still times where you were kind of like, he's reverting back a little bit here. But I would say for the majority of the season, played very well. I think something that was overlooked a lot towards the end was he was blocking a lot of shots. I don't know that you want some of your top guys blocking as many shots like that, like he and York were towards the end of the year. But he was still doing it. You know, he was playing PK, a lot of 5-on-5 minutes. He's a middle pair guy, which I think is important to remember, right? Like, cause against some of these top lines, he, in my opinion, he gets exposed. So it's fine to say he's a second pair guy, but yeah, I think if the Flyers are going to be building a defense with a lot of these young guys coming up, Sanheim should probably be part of the core six. So yeah, I'm going to say stay to keep it short.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an easy one. I think it is what it is. Still trying to get that number one guy. If you get that number one guy and potentially plays with Drysdale, I mean, I know the left-right matchup might not be where you're liking. Guys like York and Sanheim are in your lower pairings. You got a pretty good decor. So hang on to what you got. He gets a lot of hate, much like Coburn did. When Coburn was playing not top-line minutes, top-line minutes, he was a very good defenseman. Part of that was playing with Teeminen, but he didn't always play with Teeminen. And he was very valuable. That's why I think CBY gave up a first, a third, and Rakho Gudas for him. But when he's on your top line, he's going to catch a lot of flack. He's going to catch a lot of hate. So you play him in a role that he's deserving of and where he should be. Very valuable player. I like him. I like that he wants to be here. And you roll with that going forward unless somehow you get blown away with some ridiculous deal, which is not happening.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So our third player.
Who was the third? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
I think it was Delorier.
Nick Delorier, 2 years remaining. This is one of those I really don't care, but I will lean stay because what are you going to do with that contract? But also, you do need guys like this when they play the Rangers and you have Rempe and things like that in the regular season. You don't want them pushing your guys around. But again, he should be the 13th forward. I had to do quick math there. He's a guy that I don't want in the lineup unless you're playing matchups with other teams that are trying to push you around, things of that nature. He really had a pretty rough season last year. but he could be effective if used sparingly. But then towards the end of the season, if they're in the mix, you just kind of pull him, and it is what it is. You know, I mean, he's not on, you can't just cut him. So you could trade him. Sure. If somebody wants him for 2 years, be my guest, but there's nothing that tells me he needs to be completely out of the lineup and off the team. I think the players respect what he does. And I think I like that he had like fight of the year, and he was pretty close to leading the league in fights, wasn't he? If not being the leader, I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. But when he is on the ice, not doing those things, it's pretty rough. It is what it is. The numbers back all that up. But I think we're still in that space where a lot of our players are young and need to put weight on and things of that nature. And you can't have Lawton be doing all the heavy lifting. We literally saw the guy get jackknife powerbombed at center ice a couple of years ago. So sometimes you need a guy like Delorier until, you know, for certain matchups until you're ready to rock and what have you. So, you know, Ristolainen can prove he can stay healthy and good at the same time. So I'm not banging the door down to get rid of this guy. However, if I learned tomorrow he was traded for a 7th-round pick, I would not lose an ounce of sleep over it, and I don't think many people would.
I love Nick Delorier.
Oh, Jim would lose sleep.
Not just because he was on our show a couple seasons back, but
when we signed him, yeah. Came
hell of a first. Guy.
Great guy.
Somebody I'd want to hang out with, you know? Like.
Oh, yeah.
And I know people listening are like, well, what the hell's that got to do with him helping the hockey team? But he's a culture guy, and I don't think he gets enough credit for being one of these guys that came in and helped change this culture. Jack, you mentioned somebody getting power bombed, right? Like, you can imagine how bad your locker room is for, you know,
nobody stood up for him.
Team to allow that.
We were seeing people like Farabee start throwing fisticuffs that year. This is like two and a half
Oscar
years
Lindblom
ago.
Dropped the gloves.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, Lindblom. Jesus Christ. Like, that can't happen. That can't happen. For Rempe, for these tough guys that just want to push your team around and cause chaos while your young team is growing and whatnot, it's nice to have a guy like this around. So, and again, he's not going to be around for us going for it. If Mishkov comes over, we're having a different conversation. But even then, what if they run at him? You know, it's just something.
We just watched McDavid take a cross check to the jaw the other night Zadorov and Soucy. And, you know, I'm like, all right, well, who on Edmonton can take on either of those guys? And it's not going to be Evander Kane. I mean, he's a tough dude, but he's on the smaller side compared to those guys. And, you know, like you said, as a 13th kind of forward type guy, and people are going to bitch about the cap hit, but it is what it is. You know, the franchise was in such a state that they needed to overpay for a Nick Delorier. All right.
Well,
like,
it's not all on.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, they needed to entice him to come to this team. Like, that's how bad it was. Like, they needed to give an extra year and maybe a couple extra bucks, like, for Delorier. Right? Like, and I know it was Fletcher, who's a moron in of his own, right? But, you know, give the guy some credit, right? He's not being paid to score 20 goals a season. Yeah, he's being paid to do whatever he does on the ice, but I think he's made more of a difference off the ice, you know, in that locker room. Guys feel, we've talked about it on past shows, and I don't want to, you know, overblow it, but you feel a little safer when you have a guy like that on your bench. You play a little bit more free, you know? You don't have to worry about some jackass like Rempe taking, or Trouba maybe taking a run at you. You know what I mean? It's,
oh, yeah.
Or at least, you know, if that does happen, you know, you have somebody on your side. It's not going to be, you know, I don't want to see guys like Farabee and Konechny dropping gloves, you know, breaking their hands on some guy's jaw. We need them to score. So fortunately or unfortunately, you still need guys like Delorier or even Hathaway, who's a hell of a player, by the way. So, yeah, I would keep him as a 13th guy. So
exactly. If somebody gets hurt, you don't have to put them in your lineup. You can still pull from the Phantoms, still see what you have in those guys. It just doesn't hurt you to keep a guy like this around. So, Delorier, stay.
Yeah. I'm penciling a couple guys in here. So, we got Sanheim. We're putting Sanheim on the top pair or second pair?
Going into next year, depending on camp goes and what they do in the offseason, I think he'll start on the top pair.
Okay. We'll put him as top pair. Excuse me. Okay. All right. So, 20 minutes in, Let's knock out our next segment pretty quick here. We have our guest backstage. We're going to bring him on in just a few minutes here. So let's knock out this next segment, Jack. I hope everyone enjoyed the Stay or Go segment. We're going to make that more of a thing going forward. Obviously, we'll get to some more spicier players to see who stays or goes. Now, next segment, a little bit of prospect talk, a little bit of Flyers prospect recap talk, Jack. And first player on the list here, still playing for the London Knights. And just in case you guys didn't, you know, this is not an LA Knights hat. This is a London Knights hat. So pretty cool. They are currently winning their series. I think it's the Oshawa Generals. Somebody correct me if that's not correct. And they're up 3-0 in the series. And last I saw, they're up 3-0 tonight. So they're going for the sweep, for the OHL championship there. That's Barkey and Bonk. So, Oliver Bonk, Jack, I got to admit, this is a guy that I hadn't really watched as much this year. And, you know, I watched him a lot the last couple nights. This is a guy that could be borderline top pair guy. Like, most likely, like, definitively a second pair guy. But he's a guy that can, you know, if he absolutely hits on every level, could be a top pair guy, right? But when I watch him, I'm not sure if everything is going to train. Like, he's not going to put up 60, 70, 50 points in the NHL, right? But he's going to be a very good player. I took a couple notes here. I'll just breeze through these real quick, just kind of throw them at you. If I can find my tab. I got 600 tabs open, so I apologize.
You weren't right, very nice to Bonk last episode. I like that.
I was not.
Yeah, all right, change your heart.
Let's go. Skating. So he's a good skater. He's got smooth, powerful strides, covers a lot of ice quickly. Like, he has deceptive, I don't want to say it's speed, but he's deceptively fast. Like, 3, 4, 5 strides, he's blue line to blue line. All of a sudden, he's in on goal. Like, he's pretty fast. I don't want to say he's quick or he's like got blazing speed, but for a defenseman, if he's caught, he's getting back quick. At the same time, if there's a rush, he's getting in it. Great vision, kind of sees things unfold before they happen, especially on the offensive end. It's funny because he wasn't drafted for his D, but you can see he's got an offensive brain. He's got an offensive mind about him. There was one play, I think I even shared it, where there was a turnover in their own zone. They were able to break out, and before the play happened, Bonk's already, you know, booking it down to the other end of the ice, receives a pass, goes in on goal, and scores. And that was refreshing for me to see because he wasn't scoring a goal on the power play in the bumper where, you know, maybe he plays that position in the NHL. You know, we'll see. I'm not going to sit here and say probably not because I don't feel like being negative tonight. But we'll see if that happens. But, you know, it was very pleasantly surprised to see what I was seeing. And I watched his last three games, you know, in the championship because I felt like those were going to be the more competitive games and they're winning games 8-1, 9-1. So it's still tough to watch and to get a good judgment just because London is just an absolute juggernaut of a team right now. So another point that I wanted to bring up for this, Jack, was his stick handling was very good as a defenseman. Like, he maneuvered his way out of trouble multiple times, and in one instance, even drew a tripping penalty as a 6'2 defenseman. Passing's also very solid, moves the puck deliberately, and rarely turns it over. There was a case where he was pressured and kind of coughed it up the middle, led to a direct scoring chance for the opposition. But not everything can be rainbows and unicorns. You know, sometimes these guys make mistakes. I touched on his ability to read the ice real quick. All right. So you guys want a player comp?
I know you don't, but go ahead.
I don't, but I feel like it does help people, you know, kind of.
It's fun. You know, let's be real. It's fun. It's a little fun.
Right. Did you see this comment?
Oh, I saw it the second you started talking about Bonk.
So, all right, I'll give you guys a player comp. I got player comps for all three guys we're going to talk about tonight. And, you know, typically I don't like player comps just because for whatever reason we find like the most outrageous name to compare some of these guys to. And then when they don't reach that peak, it's kind of like, oh, this guy's a bust, right?
Well, you don't say Bobby Orr, I'm turning the podcast.
My player comp for Oliver Bonk is going to be a Colton Parayko. And I think he can put up those types of numbers in the NHL. He's got good reach. You're describing a potential player at center. Oh, no. Sorry, this is a defenseman, Scott. he's long. He's kind of got like a noodly body, or he gets noodly. His long stick in the way. He can be physical. He's good along the boards. He's got to fill out a little bit more. Obviously, he's a young kid, but I think he plays like or similar to Colton Parayko, where he's physical, but he's not going to be laying anybody out. Like he's physical in the defensive kind of ways. Does that make sense? Like he'll go to the corners and win battles, but you're not going to see him, dropping anybody on their ass kind of thing.
I mean, that would be, I know Pareko's play when he first was around, everybody was like, oh God, he'd be like Pronger a bit. Cause Pareko's 6'6". Bonk's what? 6'2", which you could still play. Yeah, he's still tall. He can still play, that way. If he can grow into his body, but I would prefer him keep more of that offensive skill and do what he does on defense, which you already knew about going into the draft. That would be great. He'd be like a slenderer, more efficient Parayko, because Parayko, in my opinion, did not grow into the player I thought he was going to be. If Bonk could, then damn, you got a hell of a player on your hands. Like when I first heard that name, first thing that came up was I know there's a little bit of a size discrepancy, but play style, that's that you like you had alluded to earlier when you started this top pairing potential. Now not number one, but top pairing potential D. That would be amazing considering where they drafted him and the hate that they got when they got it. So I mean, I actually kind of like this one too. Which is funny because Radek Bonk played for Ottawa and he played with Wade Redden, and Wade Redden in the late 90s and early 2000s was a hell of a player. So that would be something. That's a throwback. I love it. That's what drew my eyes to it. That is the throwback right there. So, but again, like these are players that you can win with. Like you can, if you never get that number one defenseman, but you have a plethora of these guys who could play like with your Yorks and I almost said your Reddens, with your Yorks and your Bonks and whoever else they add or draft or get not. And maybe nobody's a number one, but you have a lot of good, you have just a good solid core. You can win with that, especially if you have a generational talent potentially in Michkov and Lord knows what they do at center as your forwards. And if they figure out goaltending, like sky could be the limit. So if we can't, and we never do find that number one defenseman, a plethora of these kind of guys will go a long ass way.
That's for sure. And you mentioned Michkov, and I'm going to get to him. All right. We saved the best for first in this episode, as far as, recapping prospect season. So obviously Bonk's season is still going. I'll give you his numbers real quick. He's going to be playing in the OHL again next year. I don't think he can play for the Phantoms. So unless he somehow makes the Flyers, which I don't foresee, he'll be playing in the OHL. This season in 60 games, 24 goals, 43 assists, 67 points. And for some, projections here, NHL-wise, I think he can be a 35 to 40-point guy with, 5 to 10, maybe 12, something like that, goals a season. If you go look at Colton Parayko's numbers, Scott, he can hit 10 goals a year. 35 looks like it's his max points-wise. But I'm thinking 35 to 40 plus for Bonk. Like I can't see him ever hitting 50 or like I hope he does. Like a 10 goal, 30 assist season is possible. So there's 40 points. I mean, that's what I see. I see a 35, 40 point guy in the NHL. I don't foresee him scoring, 12 to 15 goals in the power play, obviously. So he's going to have to figure out another way to score goals. And that's why I kind of see the totals as what it is.
but we better at least see them experiment with him in the bumper just for a little bit, just for a little bit for what he was doing in junior. I mean, come on, Jim, him, yeah. Michkov, maybe Morgan Frost turns into this, you know, and then when they get a net front presence, it's game over.
Speaking of net front presence. So, Michkov, I was watching a lot of him last night. And obviously the first thing that you think of when you think of Michkov is not net front presence, but this kid loves to play around the goal. He needs to be there. Like there's a magnet, like behind the net, and that's where he's playing. So, and this is what the Flyers need. They need a guy that's hungry for the puck around goal. And it's weird because he's not the biggest guy, Jack. Like watching him in this KHL league, he's small. Like he's not a bigger dude. So I'll just breeze through some of the stats and notes I've taken here for him. And you guys can find all like more of this information on the Fantasy Hockey Now podcast. I'll tweet out the Twitter handle for that in a second. I'm just going to breeze through Michkov because we have our guest waiting and get Colin in a second. So Michkov, he loves to use his edges behind the goal. He kind of slips away from defenders. He loves to play with the puck. Like he needs the puck and he likes to make guys look dumb. Very slippery behind the goal, wreaks havoc in the offensive zone. He'll have no problem adjusting to the speed and I think physicality of the NHL. His passing and handling are elite. Here's one knock though, Jack, and maybe it's because he's far and away the best player on his team right now. I'd like to see him pass the puck sooner sometimes. He's got a tendency to try to maneuver his way out of trouble instead of making the simple pass, right? Like we've all played with that kid growing up who's kind of like a ball hog, like, and you're standing there wide open and he's doing this and that, and he ends up, you know, turning the ball or the puck over or whatever, and you kind of get a little angry at him. That's how I found myself being sometimes. And it happened more than once. It actually happened a lot watching Michkov, where he's got a guy there waiting to accept the pass. And he just made things harder than it should have been, right? Like he knows that he can, you know, maneuver past some of these guys. So he tries to do it. But for somebody like me, just make the simple play, you know, and space will open up and you can get the puck back, you know? So I'm going to be interested to see how that translates when he gets to the NHL, because the guys here, I mean, I'm sure the guys there don't like it, but the guys here aren't going to, that's going to be an adjustment. And maybe that's just something that he's doing now, right? Like he's still a kid. Let's not forget. I think he's 20 years old, something like that, 19, whatever. So he needs to mature and grow out of that. But something, you know, like I said earlier, when I watch these guys, sure, I'll post the goal videos because they get the likes and the clicks and the retweets, whatever. But there are also things that I'll see and I'm just like, ooh, that's not going to fly, right? And that was one of those things. I'm not going to make it a huge deal. But he's kind of a puck hog at sometimes.
Well, they had mentioned being ready for Michkov when he comes over. And I think one of the things is they got players that are here that are, I don't know if you call them better, but they're more seasoned. But potentially getting somebody else in here to play with him or be better than him. I know it sounds crazy. And it's not easy to do, but getting a star in here, another star in here, is a big deal for everything you just said. So yeah, we'll see. Might not be an issue. Might be maturity. Might be a little bit of everything. But getting that other star, potentially a center, does a lot more than just upgrade your team. It has a ripple effect through the entire roster.
And while I'm watching him, I'm like, man, this is a guy that I'm going to have to adjust to a little bit, because everybody knows by now I don't like fun. I like to watch nice, clean, do it the right way kind of things. And those are the players that I end up kind of liking. You know, I like the guys that kind of bust their ass and, you know, work hard to get where they are. Like when Michkov comes over here, I'm going to have to, you know, just appreciate him for how he is, because he's going to want the puck and he's going to want to do, you know, crazy, sometimes probably stupid stuff with it. And I'm going to be screaming at him to pass the puck sometimes, I'm sure. Right. But if he's going to score 40, 50 goals a season, 100 point seasons, that's fine. Do what you want, because that's common. The 40, 50 goal, 100 point seasons are common, right? When I'm watching this kid, I'm like, you know what, hog it all you want. You're gonna be elite, right? And speaking of elite, his IQ is elite. At times, he looked too smart for the players he was playing with. He attempted to do too much on his own, as I already mentioned. His anticipation's very good, even while playing defense. But while he's obviously not a two-way guy, right? So I'm going to have to let that not bother me either. Like, his defense is okay. He'll put himself in the position, but he's not in a hurry to get there, if that makes sense. Like, he's not dogging it, but he's not busting it to get in position to play defense either. So while he's playing defense, you can tell he's thinking about offense. Like, he's waiting for the bad pass so he can go the other way. It's almost like he's annoyed that he has to play defense. You know what I mean? I don't want to say that he doesn't want to play it, but you can just tell he's waiting to get the hell out of the defensive zone. You know what I mean? Which I thought was kind of fun.
Typical Russian.
Made me laugh a couple times. Like, man, this guy does not want to be in his own end right now.
Good Russian forward. No problem.
Yeah. Something that surprised me, and I'll only give a couple more here because I don't want to keep Colin waiting anymore. Surprisingly, he's a very good forechecker. Gets into the zone quick and not afraid to lay the body on guys. There was one play where he got in on a forecheck. You know how they kind of sometimes keep it behind the goal, let things reset, and the defender kind of sits in front of the goalie? Well, he went behind, right, and tried to smoke the defender out, ended up turning the puck over, and was on the scoring end of a give and go because of a turnover that he created. So he'll pressure the puck, in the offensive zone, especially to create offense. Like, he's a goal merchant. Like, he was born to score, basically, is what I got while I was watching him. And as I mentioned, there'll be more of this information on another show. Let me get the handle out real quick for you guys here. So we can go on and get Colin in here. Excuse me one second. Let me just get the handle. All right, so the show that you guys need to go watch for more of this information, Emil Andre will be on there as well. It's called Fantasy Hockey Life. You can find the Twitter handle on Twitter, obviously, at Fan Hockey Life. There'll be more information about Michkov, Bonk, and Emil Andre coming on their next show, I believe. So you guys want a player comp for Michkov before we get Colin in? I have one for you. You ready, Jack? It looks, when I watch him, this is like a Nikita Kucherov type player. And I can only hope that he has the same attitude as Kucherov when it comes over too, because I love that guy.
Oh my God. Could you imagine if that's who they are adding to this team? That I've heard of Ovechkin. That's a little crazy, but still.
This guy's going to win trophies, man.
A full blown superstar, top five, top three player in the league. I would die for a player of that caliber. You can do a lot. And we haven't had anything like that
since. He's going to win Richard trophies. He's going to win scoring trophies. He's going to be fun, man. Flyers hockey is going to be real fun. So with no further ado, I mean, I hope you guys enjoyed those two segments, but let's bring Colin in here, man. Like, what better way? Like, we couldn't have planned this show any better for you guys. We had our stay or go segment, a little prospect segment, and now we're bringing in friggin' Colin Newby for you. Are you ready?
Hit me,
Colin. Thanks for waiting backstage, man. How are you?
Yeah, sure thing. I love the prospect talk. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you on, and not just because you gave us that shout out in the article. It just happened, and I asked you to come on. You sent that. I'm like, oh, man, I hope he doesn't think just because he did that we're getting him on the show here. But I thought that was pretty cool, so thanks.
Yeah, of course.
All right, so obviously the big talk right away, man. You had a recent article. Is this a series that you're doing for the summer? Hang on, I have it right here. The Flyers offseason. Flyers offseason trade targets. Is this like a series or is this like a one-off type thing?
Yeah, this was the first one I've written, but it is going to be gradual throughout the summer. Jacob Chychrun's name has come up. Not sure if I'll do Victor Hedman, but I've even heard a little bit of rumors about him, but I haven't looked into that one as much yet. But yeah, anytime some names come up, I'm going to keep doing some similar evaluations there, whether it's a fit, whether it's not a fit, but Trevor Zegras was up first.
So I'm posting the link in the chat. I don't know if it's going to come up right, but if you guys want to check out the article, just in case you haven't already, just copy and paste that in your URL. So, all right, let's talk Zegras here, man. So
yeah.
Is this a realistic guy? I mean, we've been hearing Zegras for how long has it been now, Jack? Like 2 years or at least a year? Is Zegras somebody that you think could come in and really make a difference?
Are you asking me or Colin?
Oh, sorry, Colin.
You got
It first came on my radar as more than just any old name thrown out around the time of the Jamie Drysdale trade. You just saw that linked, and with the struggles that Zegras had this year, there was some talk that he wasn't that great of a fit in Anaheim. They do have Leo Carlson and Mason McTavish, so I don't think a change of scenery is out of the question. And I know Elliot Friedman's been just talking some rumors about discussions. He did say that the trade packages probably don't match that well. So I don't think it's like on the horizon right away necessarily, but there is speculation enough to analyze the situation. And that's why it came about in the first place.
Yeah, it's to be noted, Jim, you had said, has it been too, from what I remember, the first inkling we heard of anything was that he and Drysdale's contract negotiation got pretty rough. And I'm being nice. And Drysdale's already been moved. And a lot of, you know, people would say, oh, well, they dealt from a position of strength. It's not as strong as a defensive core as you think. They have some great names. And they, but I wouldn't even know if I put Drysdale in there based on his quality of play up to that point. Really, it was just his draft position, and I'm sure they kind of screwed the guy being shot right into the NHL. I think, that, unfortunately, it was one of the worst things that could have happened for his career development. But back on topic, Zegras had really rough contract negotiations as well. We had talked at playing Gauthier at center. I don't think they'll do that, but they have the option. And they're getting another top, three pick in this year's draft. We'll see what position they go there. They could wind up with a Demidov potentially. It's not for what we view and what he may ask for and demand when he gets a real contract, like his true contract. It might make more sense for Anaheim to move on from Zegras. I don't know what that deal is to what Colin is saying. We have all of our speculation, but of a lot of what we put out there is what makes sense for us. Don't know if that makes sense for Anaheim, but that's really where all this came from. Bad contract negotiations, like really bad, lowballed, things got nasty. They signed both players midseason. One of those players is already gone. And if anything, I think people thought Zegras might have gone first. And obviously opportunity, you can make the argument Gauthier becoming available, maybe Pat Verbeek just struck while the iron was hot. I can get a guy for lower than what I should have, whatever. It's always going to be a little bit of everything. I don't think it was flat out just that. Drysdale was definitely not performing to the sixth overall pick standards, and they just saw an opportunity. Could they do the same with Zegras? I kind of agree with Colin. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. I don't think it's even going to happen this offseason. I think somewhere along the way, when they start to see who their core is going to be, I have a feeling Zegras might be odd man out. Then a deal becomes more clear. Then things happen. But are we the team that does that? Do we want that guy? In Colin's article, you talked about one Tortorella. The number one thing we remember about him doing the Michigan was Tortorella's response to that. You could argue, is Tortorella going to be here long-term, though? Is it even worth mentioning? It is worth mentioning, but that is a point. He's not. I think when his contract's over, he's getting bumped up to the front office in some capacity, and a new coach is coming in, so you can't build your team around what Tortorella thinks. But there is something to entitlement. We learned about that with Gauthier. I'm not saying Zegras is that bad, but we really don't know. He's not our guy. So I'll throw it back to you, Jim. I know we all got excited, and sometimes if you need a center of that caliber, you have to take what you're given. But where are you at with all this?
Well, I'm curious. So I'm just kind of looking for one of my points I wanted to bring up here. I'm curious how he would fit, right? Like it makes sense. And Colin, I mean, maybe I should ask you. So I'm looking at your article now, and you mentioned in your article, you know, obviously Anaheim now has Leo Carlson, Mason McTavish. You know, they don't really need Trevor Zegras as a third line guy, third line center. I think they're playing him more on the wing. I mean, what do you think here with Zegras? Do you think he would be a fit with the Flyers? Do you think he would play center? Would he get along with Tortorella? I mean, you know, there's the entitlement thing too. Does his attitude fit in this locker room? Do you think the Flyers have, I'm asking a lot of questions, obviously. So let's go with
we
that first.
Just, and we should just read the article at this point. So by all means.
Yeah. Let's go one at a time and I'll follow up with a couple here.
First of all, I think just in a hockey sense, he is a fit. We talk all the time about how the Flyers lack the top end skill guy. Well, Zegras has great puck skills and a dynamic offensive ability. I think that is one thing the Flyers lack, especially down the middle. You have something with Owen Tippett. I think he's a pretty dynamic forward, but he was the same type of sort of reclamation project where I think he was performing under the standard that you expected when he first came into the league. And then he came over to the Flyers and he did see that type of surge offensively. Also made the comparison to Travis Konechny in my article when he had that down period. I think it was 21-22 season where he was kind of snake bit, wasn't scoring. He went back to the drawing board, took another upswing offensively. I think it's very well within reason that the same sort of thing could happen if you saw Zegras come into a top line role here, at least in the meantime, because you don't really have the most skilled centers in the future. Once you're coming back into playoff contention, cup contention, whatever, maybe he bumps down to the second line center, something like that. But to say it simply, I think he's a great fit from a hockey standpoint. It's definitely more complicated than that. Quick side note, I should have said this in the opening, but Jack, you mentioned Pat Verbeek, and is he really sold on Zegras as a point of the future? Remember that Zegras is not his draft pick, and the Flyers also have Bob Murray, who was with the Ducks. That was part of the logic of getting Jamie Drysdale. So those guys came up with Bob Murray, and now that he's out, do they go to the same organization where he is now? It's possible. It's at least a connection, and we know the Flyers love to operate on that sort of thing. But part of the reason that I felt so intrigued by this topic was your guys' interview with Jason Mertidis. When he said that thing about entitlement, it really caught my ear. Curious to hear from you guys first what your impression of was that comment was from a member of the Flyers organization.
Well, Jim, I'll tell you right now, you asked me 5 months ago, I'd have been a little bit worried. I was more open to giving players the benefit of the doubt. Cutter Gauthier has ruined me. If I even hear entitlement, I'm like, get the fuck out. I don't want you anywhere near my, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it so dramatic, but like that kind of mindset scares me because I feel like these players today, these young players today are more susceptible to that. Like, I feel like it can poison a locker room if the wrong guy has the loudest voice or one of the loudest voices. And one thing we didn't mention is, and I could be wrong, and I hope I am. God forbid they bring him in. Zegras is close to players like Drysdale and York, I believe, if not more. Like, you know, and so if he were to like infect like our players with that mindset, and I'm putting a lot on the kid. I don't even know if he's this bad. I'm just burnt by Cutter so badly, but like I'm so worried about that I'm out. I would rather roll the dice with somebody else, let somebody else, because it's not going to be cheap. You're not going to get, I know he had a down season, but he's coming off of what, like 2 60-point seasons before that? He's not going to go for cheap.
61. I mean, an injury shortened season.
Exactly. And you can, if you're the agent or Pat Verbeek, you're like, well, he was injured. or a bad team. Who's he playing with? You can make excuse after excuse. So you're ponying up to get this guy. And if not only if he doesn't work out, but then he infects what you do have, like you are starting all over. And what do you, then you got Mishkov. You're just what, wasting his career? Like, I mean, that to me, there are so many red flags, not all his fault, but unfortunately, this is the time that we're in. These are the players that we're dealing with their inner circle. Tell them they're the greatest from like age 11 to when they get drafted and they can demand trades before they ever step on the ice. That's a massive problem. And I don't want the, Zegras could be the next greatest thing. I don't want the potential of ruining my franchise after we just had 10 years of asshole hockey. So I'm unfortunately out. I would rather go a different direction. I'd rather hope something else pops up. If I'm wrong, whatever. The negatives massively outweigh the positive, in my opinion. And it really is very new to me. As I said, when I started this, really Cutter is the reason I feel as strongly as I do. And I know I'm not alone.
Yeah. And I think a lot of what you're saying, at least from the outside impression that I have, is how the Flyers as an organization feel. I did hear from somebody, and this was not directly from the person, so it is a little bit down the line, keep that in mind. But I heard from somebody that I would consider in the know that a former player would just say, oh, if they basically said they acquire Zegras, this former player would absolutely hate it. So I think that attitude is within the organization that they don't really like this guy. But one thing from my perspective that I try to put in my writing is what the Flyers will do or are willing to do versus what I think that they should do and form it all together. I think they gotta consider this from a little bit of an outside the box perspective. They hammer the word culture like nobody I have ever heard before. I don't know if you guys have heard me complain about this before, if I've ever done it to you. They love that word at an unhealthy level, in my opinion. So I think a huge part of their concern would be he'll disrupt this culture that we're trying to build. Well, if John Tortorella is building this culture, wouldn't a different angle on that be that he could take a player who doesn't necessarily have the best attitude, whip him into shape, and maximize that talent in order to correct a young player's attitude? And the comparison I made in the article, I don't think this is extreme because I want to be fair to this player, but the comparison I made in the article was Cam York. Remember, John Tortorella pushed him down to the AHL to begin last season. I get the impression that that was why. He thought, I'm the first round pick. I'm going to walk in here. I'm going to be the power play guy and everything. I get a sense that that's what made John Tortorella mad in the first place. And over the past two seasons, I'm pretty comfortable saying that they've moved on from that and that Cam York is probably better for it. So the way I see it, you want a coach who's doing this whole culture thing and trying to substantiate this subjective sort of idea to maximize the talent within that culture. So I'm curious to hear what you guys think of that.
I mean, that's a great point. And
it's a little unorthodox, I understand it, but it's an interesting idea to me.
So what it comes down to, and I would be all for it, is just price. It's price of acquiring the player to attempt to do that. And for me, if you can get a good deal, if you can move on from pieces, if they were only interested in, and I like Farabee, but this team has a plethora of wings. It is what it is, you know, and you can do like a Farabee and Lord knows what else and not kill your core or not kill what you have. I saw one rumor. I know this isn't true, but it was like Ristolainen and Farabee. I'm like, well, I would do that tomorrow. I mean, you're moving. Yeah. You're moving. If it was something like that, then by all means, you know, cause then they'll do what they got to do. They won't kill themselves getting rid of Zegras if it didn't work out. But if they're giving up core pieces, if they're giving up serious draft capital, I don't think it's a you can't roll the dice on that. You're it's way too much risk involved, especially like you said, Colin, where it's culture. Yeah, because then now you're just making yourself look stupid. So that's
going to be something. I'm glad, Colin. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because this whole time I'm like, well, if the Flyers' culture is as good as they say or they think it is, they should be able to bring in a guy like Zegras and kind of, you know, show them how they do things here. Because in Anaheim, you know, it's not by accident that they went out and got guys like Gudas, like Alex Killorn, you know, because they've been drafting for however long. Mm-hmm. And maybe they haven't had the right mix of vets out there to show them. Hey, they brought in two guys that have been around winning teams, right? Gudas from Florida, Killorn from Tampa Bay, right? Like, sure, Henrik was a vet, but how long has he been in Anaheim for, right? Like, Getzlaff's gone, Perry's gone. All these guys that have won in Anaheim are gone. So these kids, the kids out there don't really have, you know, the right guys to, you know, bring them along. Or the culture in Anaheim's maybe that not that great. Maybe the kids outweigh the veteran presence out there. So while listening to you guys, that was my thought. Like, well, the Flyers should have the locker room to bring in a guy like Zegras, right? Like, it's funny because we were talking about a guy like Delorier earlier as a 13th forward. You step into that locker room being, you know, however disrespectful or whatever it is with that attitude, you don't think a guy like Nick Delorier is going to say something to you? Right. And, you know, I mean, imagine Nick Delorier, you know, confront you, you know, you're going to say something back, right? Like, there's a respect there, you know, like, this is his team. You're new, you know, you need to, you know, shape up. The other part of that is what I could see happening is, you know, Zegras will be benched. Right. And everyone's crying now because, you know, random guys that Frost is used to get benched or who else? York was sent down, which was a great example because he's another U.S. National team player. Same team that obviously Zegras came from. So there are ways to deal with these guys. And I think the Flyers have the correct culture to be able to bring them in. Right. And maybe handle them or corral them a little bit. At 22, 23 years old. Oh, sorry, guys. Somebody's at my door. Let me get that. Real quick.
Jim ordered pizza. Jim's pizza arrived. So, the one thing I was going to throw to you, Colin, real quick, is everything Jim's saying with the culture of the Flyers, and if they could corral him, you know, and teach him, I would look at it like, well, if he is friends with guys like York, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's like York, obviously Drysdale, and maybe Farabee. I can't remember.
Farabee's 1 year older, but he was the U.S. national team also. So I'm sure they've overlapped. I couldn't tell you what their relationship is like if they've really talked about that.
Okay. Well, we know that I'm pretty sure that Farabee and York are at least somewhat close, and we've seen like pictures and whatnot or whatever, them hanging out. And Tippett might even be in there.
A ton of overlap with these guys just in general.
And could they now? The only issue is if some of these guys go in a trade, and that's what I'm worried about. Because when we speak as Flyers fans, and we, you know, the grass is greener, and we're just like, oh, well, we'll just give up a Hag and a third. You know, you get the idea. It's going to cost like York. Like the first name that comes to mind, if I'm Anaheim and I'm looking at trading Zegras, the first name I ask for. And they have some nice names on D, but like outside of what is it, Zellweger and maybe one other guy, like who else do they have really? Who's in the fall? I don't know who they're going to draft. They're probably going to wind up with that Lizbushkin or whatever his name is. We'll see. But if they could go forward, so we'll see. But again, these are all prospects. Zegras is a somewhat proven commodity. As I've put the post here, how many 23-year-olds have 2 60-point seasons? And they're available. So you're going to ask for the sky and more. I'm the Ducks, and I'm looking at the Flyers. I got two centers that I like. I just acquired Gauthier for a defenseman. So I have guys coming. I'm probably going to want a defenseman plus. York is my – if I'm trading a 23-year-old guy, my first ask is York plus. So if you're bringing this guy in, you're kind of putting it all on torts. Because the players in the locker room, I could be wrong, It could be Farabee and God knows what else, but I don't think that's very good GMing, if you ask me. You have how many other teams? And he's not Gauthier. I may have made it seem like he has that entitlement, you know, screw him. You know, he's Gauthier. He's not Gauthier. He's not that bad, at least from what I've, you know, understood. And he's proven it in the NHL for two seasons where Gauthier didn't do shit. So I'm kind of like, if I'm asking for an awful lot. If they were to pull off this deal, let's assume York and Farabee and some of the guys that we would hope would help usher him in. They're not going to trade Drysdale. Obviously, it makes no sense. But, you know, they give up these top guys. Would you be worried that it could be all on Torts at that point and a guy that we know is probably not going to be here past the contract he signed? Are there too many red flags at this point between price, between, because you have to acquire, let's remember, you have to acquire a center. You need a star center. Free agency may or may not be an option. It's rare guys like this young, become available. Are you almost at a point where the price and who you'd be losing to help instill that culture? Because it's a great point you make about what they did with York. If York were here and they acquired him, look, you follow this, you do this, you'll be a better player, we'll be a better team, or the sky's the limit. But if you lose those guys, doesn't it defeat the purpose or set you back a bit? Like, I threw a lot at you there, but what do you think?
I think you're spot on that the price is the real concern here. And ultimately, why I would say it has, I mean, at least less than a 50% chance of happening. That is ultimately the hardest deterrent here that I think there is, because Anaheim's not taking, like, I think one of the rumors you said a few minutes ago was about Ristolainen in the package. Do they really want Rasmus Ristolainen? Like, I don't think so. Like, and also the Flyers have shopped Scott Laughton or gotten offers on Scott Laughton, whatever. I don't know if he's really a fit there. So do you really want to give up a younger player that you're also trying to develop in the same vein as Zegras, who needs a change of scenery? I don't know that that makes so much sense that Danny Briere is going to be jumping to do it. I think Cam York might be a deal breaker. And if you really think that it would hinge on Cam York, I think it might be off the table at that point. I focused more on Farabee in my analysis. I think they probably would give up Farabee. If you had to give up somebody of substance, which to land a great player like great talent like Zegras, you would have to give up a player of substance. I think Farabee would probably be the most likely one, and then you would build a package around that and kind of work off it in order to land Zegras as the big fish in the deal. But you're right. The package going both ways is probably the hardest part to figure out here, even if you do, from my vantage point where I'm sitting outside of an NHL locker room, waive that entitlement thing and think that John Tortorella can handle this. The Flyers leadership group should have that strong of a culture to be able to foster this kid if he does have that great of offensive skill set.
It's tough. It makes it seem like that he may not be a trade target for all of those reasons, unless they kind of have an offer out there that's lower than what Verbeek would accept. And as we stated earlier, this isn't going to happen maybe this year, maybe not next year, but one day, and then it comes through. So I don't see them acquiring him anytime soon, which means if they do trade him, he's probably going elsewhere. I think Montreal's a name to look out for, believe it or not. I've seen a lot of rumors from Montreal. We'll see what happens. He might stay for all we know. But
one thing also to consider, I didn't mention a potential return package. I feel like more and more you're hearing whispers about how the Flyers might not use the two first-round picks this year and next year. That's four first-rounders, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them move one. I mean, a first-rounder has probably not as much value as a roster player, a big player in his early 20s, but that is a substantial part of a deal. But sorry to cut you off, Jack.
No, because that kind of goes into what somebody had stated earlier, and I wanted to bring it up, but the comments are so far, I won't find it. Do you foresee, and we'll get off of Zegras a little bit here, I do like that Buffalo was brought up because there's some names there, and I'll let Jim get into that. But with the draft, do you think there is potential for them to either package both picks or package Florida's pick with a player such as maybe Farabee and move up? Just move up in the draft, really. Not so much acquire a player. What's more likely? We'll break it down this way. They use those picks and prospects to acquire some kind of player, or they use their picks and whatever prospects or more picks to move up in the draft. If you had to say today, what is more likely in your mind?
I would definitely say a player. Draft trades are less common in hockey than in other sports, I feel like. And I think just the way that the Flyers have operated in the past couple of years, I think they really like the acquisition of Tippett. They look like they won the Claude Giroux trade. And then if you remember last year's trade deadline, the talk was that they wanted reclamation projects. I forget, one of the national insiders, maybe it was Elliot Friedman, maybe it was another guy, but you heard that a lot, reclamation projects. That is part of the interest in Trevor Zegras, and that's probably the interest otherwise, is maybe guys in their early 20s. I think Tippett was around 23 when he got traded for Claude Giroux. I think those roster players are more likely, whereas in the draft, I mean, in theory, you could move up with those two picks. Like, you're talking about the one they got from Florida in that same deal. And they also have the extra pick next year from the Sean Walker trade. But I don't know if that's as likely. And Jim, you can speak to this better than I can. People are talking about how there might be a drop off from the first, what is it, three or four picks? And then the consensus is a little muzzled after that.
Yeah. So obviously, I'm sorry.
In this year's draft.
Yeah, so in this year's draft, yeah, you have obviously Celebrini and Demidov, and then there's going to be a lot of defense that'll go, and I'm not even sure any of them are bona fide top pair guys. But yeah, and then you'll have a plethora of wingers all the way up until pick like 12, 13, 14. So yeah, there is a drop though. Pretty
so
steep.
If you were trading up, in theory, you would have a specific target if you're in the top 10. And depending on how high you're going, if there isn't a consensus, then I feel like that would probably be less likely.
So two, I don't know if you call them both reclamation projects, but we were talking about Buffalo. Jim, we talked about him before, but Peyton Krebs is 23 years old. Not getting a ton of time. He is a center. Now, they did move Mittelstadt, so I don't know if that's going to affect that. But another name, 24 years old, Matthias Samuelsson, potentially a good D partner for Jamie Drysdale. Do you think in some world, if they don't do anything, they don't move mountains and acquire some huge player or move up massively in the draft, that one of these two players, if not both, could be potentially acquired from Buffalo? I've even heard Owen Power, but that just seems like way too much. But like something like that, because Buffalo gets brought up an awful lot. Our comments are all over. I see it on Twitter. What do you think?
I'm sorry, was that for me?
Anybody. Take it. Take it and run.
I think Scott Laughton was rumored to Buffalo also.
Yes.
So maybe you have a little bit of a tie there. Samuelson's also got roots in the area, a lot of ties to the organization. If the Flyers are going to acquire a defenseman, I feel like what might make sense is to go all in on the big defenseman, to where I don't know if Matthias Samuelsson is the big fish who's going to be your number one guy above maybe Drysdale, York. He's probably closer to the same tier, to where if they're acquiring a defenseman, you want the guy you eventually see as your Victor Hedman, your Drew Doughty. You want to take a huge swing on a guy with a big ceiling.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, if that's the case, you're kind of retreading what you already have and swapping out parts. So I'm not for that. The only thing about Samuelson I read was he'd be allegedly would be a good D partner for Jamie Drysdale. And if you're all in on Jamie Drysdale, if you're going to, I mean, he's 24, I believe. Yeah, he's 24 years old. So I don't know what it would cost to acquire him. I honestly don't know all that about his play. But yeah, again, we're not giving up a ton here. Krebs was talked about midseason. He is a center. He was a former first-round pick. He's been moved at least one. Yeah, he was moved in an Eichel deal. So I don't know. I think these are all smaller deals if they can't swing anything massive. I guess we would be disappointed, but at least they did something. Also, depending on who they moved. But I think we're all in agreement. Adding a stud player with a high ceiling or potential stud player and or moving up in the draft. And I'm not even moving up. The one deal I saw, because everybody, and I'm going to bring this comment up here, because Jim and I were a little nervous, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, about Yzerman. He is definitely a pure goal scorer and a guy that would just, if he pans out, holy shit. But there's a lot of bust potential there. So you want to hit with your 12th overall pick. So we're looking at like Yamchuk. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yakumchuk.
Oh, Yakumchuk. Excuse me.
You can call him Yamchuk. Yamchuk.
The Yamchuk. But if they were to move their Florida pick, which is, seems to be getting further and further down the draft, and a player, and how much better does your draft look if you come away with Yzerman and Yakumchuk? I mean, is that something they consider in that regard? So you're hitting, I know Eisman's a winger, but again, you're probably moving out wingers to acquire this pick, and you're still getting your defenseman in this alleged scenario. My question is, are they looking at not just moving up in the draft, but flat out acquiring with their way later pick another top 15 pick? Is that just too crazy? Colin, that was for you. I'm sorry.
I mean, it depends on how you want to swing it. They have a lot of needs. It's going to be true with any rebuilding team. I know Keith Jones has pounded the drum on the need for defensemen. That's kind of as a big picture type of question. With the trade for Jamie Drysdale with Cutter Gauthier, they looked at it as a top forward prospect for a top young defenseman. He's not really a prospect anymore. So I don't know how you're going to address positional need in this draft, or if you do it at all, considering these guys are, 18 years old when they come into the draft. They're not necessarily going to be in the NHL. If you do stay at 12, if you're going up higher, that increases the likelihood that they're going to play either the first year out of the draft or within a couple of years. But I don't know how you handle positional need in that way.
Okay. So that actually is interesting. Are they more likely, Colin, to attempt to get higher up in this year's draft from the 12th spot than trying to acquire two top, 12th and another top 15 pick? Do you think their aim is to either flat out trade these picks or, some next year, some this year, not all of them, for a player that can play who's somewhat young or really move up in this year's draft?
Yeah, I would say it's still a player who's already either developed within another organization, had a little bit of NHL experience. I think you also should consider that they reportedly had deals for Scott Laughton that included a first-round pick and passed on him. We don't know all the details of that, but at least the concept of it would be that they don't really want any more first-round picks. They don't want to look that far into the future, maybe. But yeah, I would say that the roster player, definitely, like we were discussing earlier when we brought up the reclamation project thing, I think that goes along the same lines.
Okay.
So I have this figured out here. I'm just going to tell you what's going to happen. Ready?
All right.
So we're talking, you know, I think Farabee came up in a Zegras potential trade, and Matthias Samuelson came up in a potential trade with Buffalo. I mean, everybody knows Matthias Samuelson is the son of Shel Samuelson. He's from the area. His sister still works with the team. Where's Joel Farabee from? Isn't he from Albany or upstate New York?
Yeah, upstate New York somewhere.
So Samuelson signed for, hang on, I have it here, the next 7 years at $4.28 million. That's a pretty reasonable contract. He's a very good defensive defenseman. Farabee's, I think, signed for the next five years, I think it is. So both contracts are pretty good. The cap hit on both is, you know, pretty fair. I mean, I don't know if it could be a straight up swap, but Farabee for Samuelson, send them both home, right? And now you have your left side D. Sure, I don't know if Samuelson's a top pair guy, but he can mesh with a Drysdale, whatever. So we have our D. Come draft day, this kind of makes things a little easier, you know? I think that there's going to be a run on defense. Like once the first couple defenders go, you know, there's a lot of top four, very good top four D. I'm hesitant to say top pair, but, you know, for sure, like surefire top four defense in this draft. So after a couple of these guys go, there could be a run. And you never know. Maybe a guy like Catton slips. Aginla could be there. The Flyers can fill their wing need. Or even, let's just say, if an Yzerman's there, he's going to be tough to pass up, whether he's got warts or whatever, like all these players do. But I guess my point is you fill the Farabee hole pretty quick there. Now you have, you level out your D pair a little bit. You go out and get your winger in the draft, or maybe you still even make a trade for Zegras. I don't know. But doesn't the Farabee for Samuelson thing kind of make too much sense? Like if two players need a change of scenery there, like I don't know if Samuelson does need a change of scenery, but they have Owen Power. They have Rasmus Dahlin. They just went out and acquired Bo Byram, right? So I don't know.
How good is Samuelson? I'm going to ask a stupid question here. Like, is he able to command a one-for-one? Now, I understand that Farabee's a winger.
Yeah, don't know if it'll be one-for-one, but, I mean, very good. He's very good defensive defenseman, yeah.
Think of what you will of Farabee, but he did technically have a career year this year. So, like, keep that in mind. That's why.
There's like an asterisk on that, though, right?
For us, there is.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Like, around the league, they're going to see that. So, look, Samuelson's no slouch, right? Like, he's going to solidify your top four. Like, that he's good enough to do that.
And he's young. Right? He's only 24. He's only 20. I mean, that is saying something. And defensemen take longer to develop. So,
they signed him for 7 years.
What's the cap hit there?
It's like 4.28. Yeah, it's
must
very
like, they must like something they see. That's it. That's really interesting. I feel like on the surface, Flyers fans would be a little upset.
Oh, maybe, they hate it for sure.
Maybe give Jim a real fucking hard time. But and
they're bringing in a guy. You know, in the long run, first thing people are saying will be, oh, because of Shel Samuelson's his dad. You know, they're still the old Flyers. Old Flyers are the new Flyers. Yada yada. But
that's true. Didn't he just like get let go like 2 years ago or something? Yeah. The organization since the 90s. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I don't know. I got to do more research on that one.
Send Joel home.
Yeah, John Tortorella is also one of the biggest people to pound the drum that you guys just mentioned. Defensemen take longer to develop. Yeah, once you get a couple of years under your belt and they're also like ultra confident in Brad Shaw developing these defensemen, that's definitely a nugget to think about. If you get a guy in his early 20s, they're probably going to be very confident in the internal development process.
I mean, if you look at Drysdale was acquired. They think they can figure out what's up with him. They have Bradshaw, like you mentioned. They want, allegedly, if they were to acquire Samuelson, they want him to be Drysdale's partner. He's 24 years old. Buffalo liked him, and I know Buffalo's not the shining example of signing players because they can identify talent, but they already liked him enough to sign him to the deal they signed him to. Maybe there's something there. Those two guys on the same pair going forward for years on end, I don't know. I mean, it's not it's not the craziest thing in the world. It's the getting him, again, it comes down to price, but it's not like a Zeger thing where it can cripple your organization. So I don't know. I it's a name I'm going to Buffalo and the Flyers are going to make some kind of deal in the next year and a half. Yeah. I'm telling you, I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be Krebs. I don't know if it's going to be Samuelson, Owen Power, or a bag of pucks, but they're going to make a deal. And it's very interesting. I kind of like it if they don't give up too much. And unfortunately, Jim remembers, we had just started a podcast like months before they drafted Farabee. I was lost my mind. I was so happy they drafted Farabee. But it is what it is at this point. He's two GMs ago. I could see them moving on from him with the plethora. He may be the only true left winger the team has. But when it comes to winger, they got bigger needs. They got bigger their eye on a bigger prize, I'll say. So I'm really curious. That's interesting. It's not a coincidence that things make sense and that name has already been brought up.
I have one element of irony to throw into this potential trade, though. Have the Flyers ever acquired a 6'4" defenseman who's a project from Buffalo a long-term contract?
Oh, my God.
Allegedly overpaid? I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's true. They have. I still love Risto. I think
where was Samuelson drafted? He wasn't
32nd overall.
Still falls into the first round pick mold. I don't love Risto, but if I see playoff Risto, maybe I will. But that is as real as the Sasquatch.
Somebody put their record with and without Risto this year out on Twitter, and I'm not going to dig it up, but their record with him in the lineup was significantly better than it was with him out. Just going to keep saying it. What always will piss everybody off, and probably rightfully so, is the amount of money that he makes. Like the same thing with Andy McDonald, right? Like, yeah, he stunk.
Whoa.
No. Yeah, he stunk. But the fact that he made $5 million made everybody hate him. Like he would be funny if he only made like $2 million. You could laugh at him. But since he made $5 million, you're like, this effing guy stinks. Like, how did he make $5 million? And I'm not comparing Risto to Andy McDonald, but if Risto didn't make $5 million, we'd be like, hey, you know what? Like, this guy's done a pretty serviceable job. But the fact that he makes $5 million, we're like, this guy should be scoring 40 points and, cleaning up in the defensive zone and putting guys on their ass.
It's measured by his contract. If he was at a low number, it'd be a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
Yes. That's all. He's a very serviceable bottom pair defenseman. He's a decent four with the right partner.
Yeah.
We'll see what he does in the playoffs one day. I swear he'll eventually tag on somebody's team. But yeah, now McDonald, that. I get what you're saying, but you're not paying $5 million for somebody to lay down and just make
right. Well, that's exactly my point. Yeah.
But Ristolainen, in theory, should look, they'd have drafted him if he were available. They took Sam Moran instead. So they wanted a defenseman of that caliber. It's unfortunate.
Just draft, man.
Well, it is what it is.
I think it wasn't Darnell Nurse. I think he was taken before the Flyers, right? They didn't pass.
Ristolainen was taken. I could put money on it. It was a 2013 draft.
Darnell Nurse was in the same range. I'm not sure if he was before or after Sam Moran.
I think Darnell Nurse went in the top 10, like 7. And I think Ristolainen was like 10, 11. And I think Moran was like 13. Something like that. Yeah. And it was like, we're going to make our progger here. And when you get a first round pick in the top 15, the first word you hear is project. You're like, oh shit. Like, I don't care how big he is, but oh shit.
So, I just looked it up real quick. Edmonton got Nurse at 7. Buffalo got Ristolainen at 8. Philadelphia is Sam Moran at 11.
I was close. Come on. I was close.
So those guys did both come off the board. They didn't have the option, but I'm just grouping them together because
it would not surprise me if they draft the Flyers at that time, draft the Ristolainen over every defenseman. Like, I'm serious. Like, that's how they thought back then.
It sounds like something they would do.
It's back in 2013. I mean, Paul Hogan was running the ship. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. So, yeah, I mean, you got it. It went Nurse, Risto, Moran, and boom, there you go. But, you know, hey, let's not do that. We're trying to be positive. We got a new organization here, culture, all these things.
Culture,
baby.
We make PTSD in the comments on Instagram over here.
What, we make our
PTSD.
I got it too, full blown. But we make our jokes, but look at Boston and culture, what that does for you. Like, I look at their lineup, I'm like, I have no idea how they're this good. And you have some top-end talent.
Send me down a rabbit hole with the culture thing. Let's leave it.
It's 120. I want to hear it, but we're an hour and a half into this pod. I have to table it.
Wow, that was quick.
Right?
So Scott's been making a lot of good points in the comments section here. I want to get at least one or two of these up.
This is my favorite
Collins, Stanley Cup pick.
That's a great comment. I totally agree with that. I love Brett Flair. It's Brent.
Brent, yeah.
So here's something. So I was talking to, how do I say this? A pretty well-known scout, at least in you know, hockey circles. Not a scout of an NHL team, so I don't want to give the wrong impression. And, you know, I had mentioned, like, oh, at least Brent Flair's been doing a good job for the Flyers. And he goes, is he? Is he really doing a good job? And I said, well, yeah, I think so. Like, look at some of the guys he's drafted. And then he goes, do you remember the draft that Tuomala was in? And I forget the year. What was it?
2021. Yep.
He goes, look at who was taken directly after Samu Tuomala. Right? And look
Dallas,
at
Dallas, right?
He said, look at the position that the Flyers still need to this day, right? And obviously, we talked about this before. The player was Logan Stankoven, and who's currently in the NHL, playing in the playoffs for the Stars. And Samu Tuomala fell off a cliff. He made the All-Star team in the AHL. We'll see. Could still turn out to be something. But most likely, an AHL player. So, you know, while he's done some good things, I guess his point was there still have been early misses. And
he did draft.
There was no first rounder that year.
Right.
That was the
traded for Risto. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about second round picks, like, seriously, like, come on. Is there a GM out there that hits on every single second round pick? I mean, come on.
I mean, that's the job, though, is to scout.
Right? He drafted Kaprizov. He drafted Kaprizov in the fifth round. Give him that.
Then he traded the next year's pick for Shane Gostisbehere. Oh, no, never mind. It wasn't for Shane Gostisbehere. They just handed it away.
That was Fletcher. Yeah. So
he's handcuffed a little bit.
Jim, the guy was drafted in the second round. That means the whole league passed on him and a couple more teams twice. So I'm not going to kill him for a second round pick, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. I know. I was surprised too, but I'm like, oh, you know what? Like,
that's like the teams pick, they.
You could argue he got the pick wrong. Like, there is an argument there, is basically what I took from that. You know, but it's like, yeah, you know, who's going to hit on every pick? But, you know, at the end of the day, you were right, you were not right.
Well, I hear the scouts all the time. They would like to, and rightfully so, shit on Hextall for the 2017 draft. I get it. You're right. You know, you went Patrick. But you know who all the scouts, and he's a good player, but all the scouts were banging the table. You know who they're banging the table for? Heiskanen. You know who's, like, one of the best defensemen to come out of that draft ever? Makar. So, like even then, it's a bit of a miss. Like, I'm not – when you get that far in the draft, and they do this with Dallas, how they draft Robertson and Ottinger in the same – I think that was also 2017. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, if you're going to play this game, you're going to be playing this game all day long, and I could probably take the same GM and go back to a different draft and show you how he picked, you know, Noodle McGruffin, who didn't make the anything. You know what I mean? It's just once you get past to a certain point in the draft, it's just silly. It's just silly. The hindsight's 2020 for a reason.
Noodle the Flyers drafted Sanheim over Pasternak that year, but he was like 8 picks behind. You always just find the best player behind him and point to it.
And Sanheim was what, the 14th pick that year? So 13 other teams. Or no, Pasternak was what, the 20-something?
I think he's 25th, but somewhere in that range.
Yeah. So, again, Boston, great job. How did Boston do in the first round of 2015? DeBrusque.
2015.
DeBrusque, Zboril, and some clowns. I can't. So, Sturken in Ballsack. I can't even say his name. Missed on Barzell, Kyle Connor, Travis Konecny, Thomas Chabot. They could have, like, it happens. One year you're on, the next year you're not. It's the draft. Like, I'm not going to lose sleep over missing on the whole league, miss on a guy in the second round. So, come on. I will take what I'll take is the overall package. If you have more hits than misses in earlier rounds, we'll talk. Yeah, but if you're going to pick, you're going to nitpick, well, this draft, he took this guy where this guy was an all-star. Well, I can do that all day long with any GM. Just name the GM and I'll find the draft.
That might be a good show, actually. Let's analyze all of Brent Flair's first three-round picks for his entire tenure here. That might be a good show just to see, because I don't know. You know, that just that one scenario kind of popped out to me.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm sending you on rabbit holes or I'm encouraging it, fueling the fire, but I could go on 100 rabbit holes.
Wait, how long has he been around, Flair? 5 years?
I think with Fletcher, right?
Yeah, I think he was with Fletcher. And Fletcher's very last draft, they took, I think it was his last draft, one of those last drafts, he took Kaprizov in the fifth round. And if you listen to the interview where Fletcher describes that draft, they were banging the table for Kaprizov. He had to trade up in the fifth round to make sure they got him. So, like, the guy knows what he's doing.
He waited for Fletcher to leave before he came over.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, Flair was hired with Fletcher.
Dude, that puts it all the way back to, like, what, 2013, 2012?
2018. I meant hired to the Flyers.
He wasn't with him in Minnesota?
Flyers 2018, Minnesota Wild 2009-10. So I guess he predated Fletcher there.
Wow, even before Fletcher. Look at that.
Over to Philadelphia with Fletcher.
I'm not sure when Fletcher got there, but there you go. So he's been with Fletcher for quite a while. And the thing I like about Flair, if you look at Fletcher's drafts in Minnesota, is he hits pretty early. His earlier first and second rounders are usually hits. Kaprizov's the outlier, if anything. But those are premium picks. If you're going to hit with picks, I prefer it be the early ones. Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. All right, man. We've had you for an hour. I was thinking maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, but we kept you an hour.
And he waited like a soldier for like 20 minutes.
He did. Thanks, Colin. Let's get a Stanley Cup pick from you. How's your bracket looking, and who do you think is going to take the cup home?
I've said all along I think the East is a little lighter than the West. So I'm more confident that an East pick can survive longer. I know the Rangers have hit a little bit of a skid. I think they're still in good shape and they're going to take care of Carolina though. So I'm going to take the Rangers as my pick.
Oh, God damn it. How could you do that?
As we're talking, are the Stars about to take the Avalanche down?
You know, I'm checking right now. It's 1-1. Actually, it's 2-1.
Maybe by the time people watch, Colorado will be out, but they've kind of been the team I'm hitching the wagon to, but I don't have the guts to pick them in this.
Miro Heiskanen. Yeah. Miro Heiskanen with the go-ahead goal.
Hey, we were just talking about him. I got Stars in the cup. I need Carolina to pull off the reverse sweep to get there to make my pick right. And if they do that, I got some friends.
Here's a question.
That are New York fans.
Even though it would help your bracket out if they did that, do you want Carolina to pull off the reverse sweep, or do you want the Flyers to just be 1-4? Because the more teams that do it, the less special it becomes, right or no?
Well, wait, who's Carolina playing?
The Rangers.
Yes.
All right, point taken. Yeah, that would be pretty. That would be pretty funny for it to happen to New York. All right. Yeah, let's end the show on that. Colin, where can everybody find your work, your Twitter handle, and obviously your work for 975?
Yeah, you can find it at 975thefanatic.com. We've done a whole digital transition, flipping radio content on there. Also doing work with WMMR, the station down the hall. Both of them carry Flyers games. The official radio partner is the Fanatic. MMR takes it when the Sixers are on there. And then you can follow my work personally at To New Beginnings. That's T-O, my name, N-E-W-B-Y, Ginnings. And really catch me on any social media platform. I'm doing as much content as I can. Mostly Flyers. Going to be a lot of Phillies over the summer also.
Oh, I love it.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Always enjoy talking Flyers for a while.
You're the man, Colin. I highly recommend you guys follow Colin if you're not already, which you probably are, but nonstop content, always great stuff. One of the best guys around, too, so he deserves a follow. So help him out, give him a follow, read his stuff. Colin, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on, hanging out with us. Always a pleasure. Let's do this. Let's not wait as long as we did this time to get you back on.
All right, great show. I'll see you guys later.
All right, man. Have a good night.
We have to. He's got to talk culture with us. I want to hear all about the culture.
That's right. When they bring in Zegras, we got to see what's going on with the Flyers culture.
I'm telling you, if he pumps out an article about culture, we're going to get him on right away. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, that's true. All right, boys and girls. What a great episode. Hour and a half episode in the offseason. No draft. Only one playoff game on tonight. Hopefully you guys enjoyed our stay or go segment. We're going to try to make that a summer thing until we run out of players. We want to shape up the roster, right? And if we have go players, we're going to leave holes in the roster, and at the end we're going to try to fill them, right? Because that's what we do around here. We plug holes, right, Jack?
I have two kids because I plug holes.
You behave. All right, and then we're going to do some Flyers prospect recap segments to keep everybody updated and things like that. I'm sure we'll be talking more Stanley Cup playoffs and the like. So for Jack, I'm Jim. I want to thank everybody for hanging out in the comments. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.